Welcome to the Traffic Masters Show. Each week, Traffic Masters explores the lifeblood of your business, generating traffic, turning visitors into leads, and conversion strategies. Mastering traffic and conversion allows you to grow a business you love and live the life of your dreams. Welcome to the show.
Well, welcome everyone to another episode of Traffic Masters here on Blog Talk Radio. I am your co-host, Gina Gaudio-Graves, the Dean and Founder of Directions University at directionsuniversity.com, calling in live this week from Bonita Springs, Florida, as I do each week on Tuesdays at noon Eastern. We've got my co-host, Jack Humphrey, the Associate Dean of Directions University, calling in from Richmond, Indiana as well. Hello, Jack.
Hello.
Looking forward to our guest today.
Yes, Dan Dees, how's here? Can we hear him?
I believe you can hear me.
Hello, Dan.
There he is. How are you?
Jack, I'll let you do a proper introduction.
Somebody has been doing this longer than me. It's getting harder and harder to find people like you. I'll give Dan a real quick introduction. We'll get started.
To a boat at some point.
Yes. I haven't been to any of the meetings lately, sorry. So, everybody, Dan Dees is a traffic expert from before Google, and he's been helping his clients and friends build their business online since Netscape was a startup. I remember that. I'm sad that I remember that. His books and courses have helped tens of thousands of people take control of their online marketing, and as the head of Brain Trust Lab team, Marketing Brain Trust, or let's get that URL just right, marketersbraintrust.com. You can check him out there. And he is taking big company tactics to small companies who are ready to grow. I kind of lost my place there. But we'll get more into what Dan's been up to and how he can share with us today. Dan, welcome so much to the show.
Thank you, Jeff.
That was not my very best intro, could you tell?
That was smooth. I liked it.
You're just being
forever.
Nice. Yeah, sometimes it feels like that. So, Dan, how are you? Can you give people a little bit more background on Marketers Brain Trust, just to get started?
Yeah, Marketers Brain Trust was originally a training company that Leslie Rohde and I founded in 2009. And, at the time we were mostly talking about search, talking about SEO, talking about pay-per-click, and really just doing training. Since then, the world has gotten more complicated since 2009, and so we've kind of had to grow with it, and we're still doing training, and that's kind of, what I really want to do is I just want to work in the labs and do fun experiments, and then when we figure out cool stuff people can do, we can, put training together to help them put it to use. But a lot of folks just don't have the resources in-house to, to do the kind of stuff that you need to do now. I mean, even a basic Facebook campaign that we'd want to put in place for a business has a whole lot of moving parts. It's not as simple as I just need an ad in the landing page anymore, And so now we're doing more done-for-you services. So sometimes that's more coaching, and it's kind of like having a part-time marketing assistant, and then goes all the way on up to all kinds of full-service stuff, which I never thought I'd be involved with, but that's why I have a good partner or two that can help us provide services without me having to be deep down in the weeds of operations every day.
Yeah, it's a very big need because, there used to be a lot more DIY in internet marketing, the possibility of it. You could actually, somebody could come off the streets and take a little course or two and figure a couple of things out and actually run something. That's getting so hard for that to actually, it's complicated now, like you said. And, we do service too, and I never thought I'd be in the service business at Brick Road Media, but I'm doing the same thing as you, trying to isolate myself from the inner workings of it, the day-to-day stuff, because that would drive me nuts. Because it brings me closer to that, that world of, wow, people really need help. They really need help, and they you know, trying to save people from their internet marketing problems and doing it for them is a big job in and of itself. Even that has gotten more difficult as it's gotten more difficult for everyone else. Is that your experience as well?
Yeah, I think that the big problem that we see out there, at least with the smaller business, you know, folks doing less than $1 million a year in revenues, we'll call small, these folks tend to have really, really, really bad measurement problems. That is to say, they don't actually measure everything that they need to measure. They don't necessarily know what's going on. That, you know, that's the challenge with whether we're running AdWords accounts or whether we're running Facebook campaigns. It's much worse for Facebook. Because when you're running Facebook campaigns, particularly to people that know you, know your brand and stuff like that, which is where you should start, those folks aren't necessarily buying from you on the first click from Facebook. But when you actually start to look at the different ways that you can model your marketing campaigns, so we had one guy that was ready to shut down his Facebook campaigns, and based on first click on last click attribution. So did they, you know, did they mash that link on Facebook and buy something right away? The revenue number was zero. The revenue number was almost $10,000 in 3 weeks. If you looked at the people where the path had started with Facebook, we've seen people cut off their Facebook campaigns because they just can't figure out how to measure the ROI, and their paid search starts to go off because they stop losing the brand name searches that they were getting as a result of that. And I hate to be an advocate for brand advertising, but if you can actually measure the impact, you can, you know, do the math on whether it's a good idea or not.
Man, you just said a mouthful. I could identify with that, wanting to turn off the Facebook ad campaign and not. There's so many ways to measure everything. How do you talk somebody down from that situation when you're helping somebody and they've indicated to you that I've got all these measurement tools. Most people are aware of a lot of them, and they've got them plugged in, and they've got them put here and there, and they've got analytics tracking certain things on their landing pages. They've got their Facebook Insights and their Facebook Power Editor ad, you know, click-through rates and all this stuff. And I mean, it's just insane. What do you do to calm somebody down about that?
I think there's a simple place to start. If they've got analytics in place and they're actually measuring conversions, so, you know, measuring transactions, measuring leads, stuff like that, you can go into analytics and get into under conversion. There's a section for attribution models where you can look at the difference between first click, last click, and there are a lot of people. Avinash has a really cool model that you can actually import. One of the cool things about analytics these days is you can import other people's conversion models. You can import other people's reporting templates and stuff like that, so you don't necessarily have to reinvent everything from scratch. You can kind of test drive a bunch of different things and then figure out what works for you. But, you know, the other day I was cleaning out, I'm sure you have the same thing, or you've got analytics accounts that people share data with you so that you can talk to them and try and help them, or maybe it's just, you know, somebody's going to call in and talk to you on the phone and you want to be able to, you know, be looking at their analytics while you're trying to answer their question. So periodically, we have to clean those up. I mean, Google will bump the number of accounts, the profiles that you can have access to, and I think we're at 300. But still, we've got it, right? I mean, that's right. We're bringing more in every day, and so we have to go in there and clean them up. And there was one that had been sitting in there for quite a while, and it was one of those deals where nobody knew who it was, so everybody was afraid to delete it. But I finally figured out who it was. I found him in Infusionsoft. And I realized this is the guy that I talked to 2 years ago in Las Vegas that was telling me he couldn't see any ROI in his Facebook campaigns and he was getting ready to shut them down. And I had actually, you know, handed him my card and asked him to, you know, schedule a call so we could go over it. He got as far as sharing analytics but never scheduled the call. So we never ended up talking. But this is the business that within a few weeks after that conversation just starts to slowly peter off. He'd been running AdWords, and that started to do worse and worse. And the last, you know, 8 months, the data in analytics is almost flatline, an occasional random visitor here and there, and then nothing. And so I had to find out what happened. And so the first thing I did was I dove into analytics, and I looked back at, you know, kind of the original question that I would have looked at if he'd have called me on the phone, which is, are your Facebook campaigns delivering no ROI, or are you just not measuring right? And what I found out was that at least 15%, and arguably as much as 30% of the revenue that he was generating was initiated. The first contact was on Facebook. Except that, again, right, last click, you know, where somebody clicked an ad on Facebook and bought right then and there wasn't that much. And so I didn't have the heart to actually tell him what I saw after I called him up. Because I called him up and said, we met a couple years ago. I'm just clearing out our analytics accounts. Just want to make sure you don't need us to have this so that we can talk about it. And he said, no, you know, I had to shut that business down, but I'm doing great. I got a job. I'm selling lawnmowers, and I've never been happier. Now, if he hadn't said, I've never been happier, I would have told him, oh, by the way, you are making money hand over fist with Facebook. In fact, that was where all of your money was coming from. I just said, that's great. Thanks for taking the time, and we'll delete that account. I don't know if that was the right decision, but... he said he was happy.
And, hey, who's to say what people love to do?
You've been
doing
this internet marketing thing a long time, Jack. You know that, like, if someone cures the addiction, we don't need to drag them back in, right?
Right, right. First, do no harm.
Yeah. So if he'd said, "I'm really bummed that I had to shut it down," then that'd be different. But he was happy. No inventory. None of that stuff. Just sell the lawnmower.
Measurement stuff is a really, really big deal, and you just have to wonder what percentage of people, you know, I used to be a tracker, as you probably know, and I hung out with people who were professional trackers, and one of them worked for the Forest Service and in Death Valley, and a German tourist got lost. And they eventually found him. They called him to my buddy to go and help with the search, and they eventually found him. He was dead. And around the campfire, we always talk about, you know, what could we have done different? What could have gone better for this guy? And my buddy said, you know, he was in within 100 or 300 yards of everything it would have taken for him to survive. Even in Death Valley, he just didn't know. He just had no clue. He had no training whatsoever, and therefore, he didn't know how to generate water out of the air or anything like that. And so he died. And so this guy's business died, too. He didn't know. And I think that's just a chronic problem. A lot of people are going along with all the stuff that's out there now. It says, hey, start up a Facebook ad campaign. It's really easy. Read my book, and you'll just have it. And then, learn how to do analytics and everything. And people will sign up for all of these things, and it looks like everybody's doing it. But I don't think that even a bare majority of the people are out there doing it right. And I think that's what you're saying, too, is that there's a lot of people out there that they have all the accounts and the books.
Too hard.
Right.
It's not that any individual thing is too hard to do, right?
Right.
You could learn any of it. And that's, you know, that's the siren song of the get-rich-quick training. Like, this stuff doesn't look that hard. I could learn that. You know, look at this idiot. Making this video, he's obviously making lots of money, or she's obviously making lots of money. Well, you know, for one thing, you don't know that. But the thing is, it's not that any individual piece is too hard for humans to learn. I mean, we're not talking about stupid people here. We're talking about pretty smart people. I mean, it takes a lot just to get the business started. You know, there's parts of it that I'm no good at that, you know, I need a partner like Leslie to deal with all the, you know, incorporation and all the other, you know, weird things about how do we characterize revenue from Bozakistan or whatever. You know, I don't want to have to deal with that stuff. I'm glad I have a partner that wants to. But it's not that any of it's that hard. It's just that there's a lot and more and more and more every year. And it gets to a point where you need specialists, you know. Back in the day, you know, in 2003, I started SEO Research Labs, and we did one service to start with. We did keyword research. The thing is, we could have somebody that did keyword research full time, and that was their specialization, in a couple of hours could knock out more than pretty much any SEO consultant out there in terms of just the quality and the number of opportunities that they could find in a couple of hours compared to what it might take somebody a couple of days to do. And that's somebody that knows their way around it, right? They're just not efficient. They're just not fast. It's, you know, the same thing. I mean, I've been trying to train people on what we do with AdWords, partly because we're expanding and we need to keep, you know, bringing people up to higher levels of power. but also because we're trying to write more scripts to do some of this stuff, because I'll go through an AdWords account in about 8 minutes and I'll have found 80% of the work that needs to be done. You know, most people get as far as saying, well, it looks like we're spending a lot of money, you know, and that's something that, you know, AdWords is actually fairly simple compared to channels like Facebook, where you're dealing with multiple intersecting and overlapping custom audiences and things like that to make it all work. But, you know, so what we try to do is we try and translate it in training terms down to here's one play that you can do. Here's one thing. Here's step-by-step how to set that one thing up and how to operate it. Now at least you've got that one thing working. Because if people just do one thing at a time, I think that the problem is you get into this thing where you're not being a serial entrepreneur. There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, it's a disease, but, you know, it's a disease that, you know, potentially – it's like, you know, it's like calling Asperger's a disease. Well, okay, maybe, but also that, you know, you have people that are extremely focused and very intelligent and able to concentrate in ways that I can't. You know, serial entrepreneur is one thing, but trying to be a parallel entrepreneur where you're trying to do 9 things at the same time and none of them get done and then you get frustrated. You know, we're getting ready to make a big push on people getting analytics completely set up, getting everybody onto Universal Analytics, getting people, especially lead generators, onto Tag Manager. Because we've had some just, you know, tragic situations where you know, somebody's generating leads for insurance, and you know, there's a certain age range where they're hyper profitable, and other age ranges where they're not. And well, when they get the form submitted, they know whether that's a great lead or a lead. Now they can't refuse service because that's discrimination. But what they could do, if they wanted to, if they had Tag Manager on there, is they could actually, you know, sniff out what's that birth year. And figure out how to score that lead. And then, you know, whether it's Facebook or AdWords or whatever, you can feed those conversion values into analytics, and you can actually measure, right, the performance of one ad or another. It's not the number of opt-ins you got or the number of conversions. It's how much were they worth. And so, you know, going and measuring goes deeper than just getting the instrumentation in place. But the thing is, once you've got that set up, now it's paying for itself forever. You know, you don't have to set it up again. And the same thing, whether it's, you know, email autoresponders or you know, a Facebook onboarding campaign. We see people all the time where they're bringing visitors to their website, and they're not doing anything to capture those people and remarket to them on Facebook so that they can make sure that they become fans or at least the qualified ones. And if we got time, we can talk about kind of the two-step qualification where we show them something that only the best customers would be interested in, and that's our like campaign. So that, you know, because, like, you don't want a million fans. You want the thousands that are worth the most, much more than you want a million.
Exactly.
But,
touched on something a little earlier that I think we need to keep touching on so that we don't have people passing out. One thing you guys need to know, listeners, is that Dan is way down the rabbit hole. I mean, he's as far down the rabbit
deep
hole as you can possibly get. And he talk about,
deep in the rabbit hole.
He dug. Actually, a lot of people say that Dan dug the rabbit hole. He's the rabbit. So don't get worried that some of the stuff that we're talking about you may not know about. One of the most important things that Dan said just recently for you guys who might be freaking out a little bit is focus on one thing and get one thing done. I think one of the
banes
of our existence.
Simple campaign that everybody should be running, Jack.
Absolutely, perfect.
Facebook. Okay, so you've got people coming to your website, right, from somewhere. Some of them might come from Facebook or Twitter or, you know, LinkedIn or Squirbler.
MySpace.
Or I made up Squirbler, but only because
I made up MySpace.
That domain was already registered when I tried to register Squirbler for my social network, so. But you've got people coming to your website. They might be coming from AdWords, you know, from all over the place, right? Now, I'm not going to get into how we, like, do all kinds of fancy nuances for this too much. I mean, we'll take people and based on the search term, we'll put them in different audiences. But you can use a service like AdRoll or Perfect Audience. I like to start people on Perfect Audience because they'll give them, like, a $75 credit or whatever. You can just Google for, Perfect Audience promo credit to see if they have any better deals than that, but I think $75 is like a default if you land on their website. That's a lot of money to actually have for remarketing of this kind. But
yeah.
You can put their pixel on your website, which is just it's one line of code that you've got to paint on the pages that you want to remarket to. So, for example, for a retailer, we might only put that onto our product page template. So somebody that got as far as actually looking at a product, those are the people I'm going to remarket to, not the people that just landed on the homepage and bounced off or whatever. So we get that perfect audience pixel or that ad roll pixel on that page, and what that does is it does cookie magic with them, and we can actually now run ads to those people on Facebook, not just on the right-hand sidebar on Facebook. If you've been on Facebook on the desktop, you know there's ads on the right-hand side, but sometimes there are also sponsored posts in the news feed. You can run ads using AdRoll or Perfect Audience to people that are on Facebook that have been to your website, and if you want to, right, you can actually just trigger the people that went to, say, a product page. The reason why we like to use Tag Manager is you can do all kinds of fancy, sophisticated stuff, like they watch, you know, 3 minutes worth of this video on this page and hovered their mouse over the red button, and now they're going to be in an audience. We can do all kinds of crazy stuff like that. But if you just take the simple step of everybody that visited your website, okay, and you run ads to them on Facebook, that preferably it's something that qualifies people. So as an example, we were working with somebody that they sell computer networking gear, expensive, like high-end, customized, custom integrated. They're after not me, like the end user of a network. They're after the people in
right.
IT and the people in purchasing. So what they do is when they're running these remarketing ads, so they're taking people who have been to their website and they're showing the ads on Facebook, and the ads are all about managing the accounting of your cloud infrastructure, and you know stuff like that that's completely inside baseball stuff for the purchasing people and the IT people that have to talk to them, okay? And those are the ones that are you know, they're interested in the ad, they engage with it, they become fans of the page, and now we can advertise to highly qualified people as fans of the page on Facebook, and one, you get your ad costs go down. Like the cost to reach people goes down, and it's much easier to get multiple impressions from your Facebook page if they're a fan, because Facebook has this notion called affinity. And so the more kind of closely they line up with what you're doing, the easier it is for you to get them. And so we can run campaigns off of that. But the simple thing, the plumbing to set up, is to get that remarketing pixel on the pages where you'd want to remarket to people from, the people that are the most qualified, the most likely to come back and buy, and then get that set up so that you can run ads into Facebook. You can play around with the advertising, but the biggest thing is with Facebook advertising, it tends to not work very well to just bombard people with offers unless they
right.
already know you, like you, and trust you. And so this is kind of the first stage of that. As they got to my website some kind of way, now I'm going to cultivate or nurture a relationship, if you want to use the HubSpot term, right? And those people are easy to get to. You can spend $20 a week on Facebook advertising and do all of that, even with a fairly active website where you've got, you know, say, more than 1,000 visitors a day coming in from other sources. It doesn't cost that much if you have that close affinity, where people end up burning a ton of money on Facebook advertising as they try and target broadly. I've seen campaigns that are targeted all
right.
males in the United States. Okay, well, hey, you know, at least segmented by gender. But, you know, as you go forward and you start to add one piece at a time, it's not that hard for people to do it themselves. It's just, right, you want to take one step, get your feet under you, understand, orient yourself again, and then you can take another step. And what you see, you know, these days we're moving to kind of, you know, training that's about one thing rather than training that's a whole big system, just because we found that you know, compared to 5 years ago, the systems were simpler and people could understand the whole system and kind of keep it in their head as one thought. Now we need to kind of, you know, build different pieces of the structure and then tie them together later to help people succeed
yeah.
with it.
Here's a big question.
So much more now.
This might be a really good question. It might not. Let's try it out. So somebody thinks that they have to do everything themselves because they don't have a budget to hire someone, because they perceive that the hiring of somebody who's as good as you guys are is going to cost them a pretty penny. How do you coach people to working up to, like, that being the goal? Because we know if we start something simple, and even if we have a $20 a week campaign, and we've got a little bit of, you know, we can see some conversion, we can see some ROI, we can see all this stuff happening on a small level. How do you coach people to get from that to somebody who, you know, like you guys, who can take it and really, really grow something big?
Well, so first of all, I mean, it doesn't cost that much to hire help as long as you're not expecting them to provide all the labor for everything, right? So, mm-hmm. you know, we have coaching programs that start at $500 a month. That's not me personally, but it's Michelle Chance, who Sankong, who's one of our folks that we've been working with for well, we've known her for more than 10 years. You know, successful mm-hmm. Online retailer, been around every block you can be around in marketing. And what she does is she's more like a project manager. So she walks you through the steps. So if we need to get analytics into your shopping cart, she'll go figure out what code needs to be done, what the instructions are, and then here's the instructions. Just do these five things, and then we can test it, and we'll be up and running. Once we've got our analytics working, then we can move on to the next thing. And we focus on one thing at a time, and it doesn't cost that much to do that way. But, you know, for people that where even that's a stretch, what we like to do is try and do these shorter focused trainings that we're doing now, where it's really about one thing. So we did one last summer called Universal Traffic Engine, which I hope is the last time we try and do a catchy name on a training, and that I win the war of branding, that we just call it what it is and put our name on it. But what it really boiled down to was three simple plays. One of them is uploading remarketing lists from your email database. So if you've got a list of customers, you can upload one of those. Building a lookalike audience, or I can't even remember if they still call it a lookalike audience or what they call it at Facebook, because they change the names of things just randomly. But we would have people upload their email list, right? Half of those, somewhere between 20% and 50%, usually will match. And that's actually somebody's real email address that they also gave to Facebook. So now I can serve ads to them. And first thing you can do is, you know, try and get them to be fans of your page. But we like to do what they used to call an engagement campaign, and now they just call it Boost Post. And we do that from the ads manager. But that works really well for people that you already have some affinity with, because what it does is it causes Facebook to target your ads to the people that are doing lots of liking and clicking and sharing, and also those tend to people, the people that are also buying. But we had people just essentially, let's go ahead and have you upload your mailing list of customers, your mailing list of prospects, and then we'll build similar audiences to those. And then have them layer on a few other interests. And the cool thing about Facebook is if you've got a high-end product, you can actually layer on a filter using their partner categories that says, I only want people with premium credit cards. So if they've got an Amex card that doesn't have a preset spending limit, for example, you can layer on people that are known to be online purchasers. And so, right, it decreases the size of the audience that you're reaching, but it increases the odds that you're going to be successful. We like to target really small audiences, try and find the center of the bullseye, and then we can expand out from there until we stop adding profits. But, you know, you start losing money long before your campaigns drop down to break even, you know, because you had profits and then they're slowly going away.
Right.
But the biggest thing people don't do is they don't target small enough, narrow enough, and specifically enough what they think might be the ideal. And so we were teaching people how to do that in that training. And we had people that, you know, we had one of the first Q&A calls. So we usually do one about 2 weeks in. And the first one we did, these guys were doing like a high-end cosmetics thing. So you're talking about, you know, $150 jar of face stuff to make your face better. I don't know exactly what it did. Better, right?
You were obviously not on their marketing team.
But, you know, it wasn't like they weren't selling a big, giant, you know, gallon vat of, you know, for $2 like you could get at Costco. They were selling this little bitty jar that, I mean, I think it's almost an insult to jars to call it a jar, for like $150. But by targeting, and then they didn't do a pushy sales ad. They did an ad that was very much in the voice and kind of what the customer would want. It was a very beautiful line drawing of a flower. And that flower is one of the ingredients, and it grows in the high Alps. And so it's evolved to survive ultraviolet rays, and that's why your skin will crack if you buy this stuff. And they didn't even say buy in the ad. It was just like, you know, it was like, well, that's why we use it in this thing, and they linked to it. That was it. and they ran that as an engagement campaign. They spent like $60 and did thousands of dollars in revenue. That was, you know, like even at the, you know, like the last click from Facebook, it was literally that good. We have another one that that just started doing that, and they've got one of those one-word domain names that I'm not going to mention, but it's one that if you saw it on the market, Jack, you'd want to buy it. And it's, I mean, it's the perfect domain name for this market. They own it. And what we found out was that Facebook wasn't generating a whole lot of, you know, direct click revenue, but the amount of type-in traffic that they were getting, because people don't have to, what was the name of that? No, they don't have to do that. They've got the one word that everybody would want. And they, you know, they haven't been terribly successful with, you know, with, you know, trying to get there with search ads and stuff like that, because the site still doesn't convert very well. But now we've actually got some traffic coming in where we can start to do conversion testing and things like that. And you know, the frustrating thing a lot of people have is they don't have enough traffic to convert, and they can't afford to go out and buy search ads. Because for me, that was always like, if I need to bust my way into a market with a sledgehammer, I'll just go buy search ads and figure out how to make money with those.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's gotten a lot tougher. The bar is higher for how, you know, how effective your site has to be in converting. But Facebook is still a channel that you can get low-cost traffic from, and you can get low-cost traffic, you know, from people who know you already, who trust you already, or from people that they've shared with. One of the crazy things about Facebook is if you don't do sales pitchy stuff, you do stuff that people would, you know, that's interesting, that, you know, kind of mentions that you exist and sell stuff, people share that. We see it, what we call the organic echo, or the organic amplification. The amplification, it's often five times as much organic reach as your paid reach, and sometimes more than that. And then we see this organic echo that happens afterwards. So there's this echo effect of traffic that we, you know, it all shows up as direct in analytics. You don't know where it came from. But when you actually start to look at what you're getting out of Facebook advertising, if you target people right and give them something that they're actually, that they wouldn't be embarrassed to share, right? They don't want to share your sales pitch, okay? But you know, come up with a good story. A contest works really well. I've been watching this contest for, it's called the Little Stopper, and there's a Big Stopper. It's some kind of photography thing that lets you f-stop. I don't even know what that is for, because I gave up on photography like 100 years ago. But they're giving away three of them, and all you have to do is like and share and comment on the post. And I don't even know what Facebook's rules say about that. The thing is going crazy. I got 9 friends that have shared that. I didn't even know I had that many friends that were photographers. The thing is, nobody but a photographer would be interested in sharing that. And so what do they get is they get a bunch of highly, highly qualified fans that are the perfect people for their market. And I'd be willing to bet that all of the exposure and everything I've been seeing, they may have spent $100 on that campaign tops to get just all over the place. And clearly they were doing a good job of targeting photographers to start with, but who did they target? The people that already knew their products, the people that already liked them. Who are they sharing it with? Their friends that are into photography, to let them know, hey, you can get this cool thing too. And, you know, I think people just give up way too early, and a large part of that, like I said, is they're just not measuring the impact. You're not seeing how much it is. I mean, I got 43 clicks on this thing. Okay, well, when you go and look at the report in Facebook and you see that I also got 400 clicks from organic shares, that 43 clicks is not even an important part of the math anymore, right? The 400 is a bigger number,
right?
And so so you know, it's
but the 43 led to the 400, right?
Exactly. It's, you know, 400 organic and 40 paid. You know, I couldn't have gotten the 400 organic without the 40 paid. But you know, does the 40 paid excite me? No. I know the campaign was effective because it got shared a lot.
Right. So effectively, I mean, whatever you paid for the 40, you now average that out over the 440, and it's a better campaign, right?
Yeah, I mean, and we see stuff like that all the time, where you can multiply the value of what you paid for by 10 or 12. You know, it drives me crazy. It goes around. I mean, you're in these marketing groups, right? A week doesn't go by without somebody, you know, posting some stupid clickbait article about, you know, Facebook is forcing you to buy fans. Well, they're not. You should be getting the fans that you already had connected to your Facebook page, right? And two, then, you know, once I buy these fans, I think I own them, and so Facebook should show everything I post to them for free. Well, you know, Mark Cuban was kind of famously whining about this a while back, right? But if you actually looked at what the Dallas Mavericks Facebook page, they were posting like 40 times a day. Well, how the heck do you expect you're going to be the only thing in anybody's newsfeed just because they happened to push like on your page one time? They're not that big of a fan, right? If they were, they would just spend all their time on your page. For the other normal
nobody's
people,
that big of a Mavericks fan.
Fun. Well, and the thing is, you know, at any given moment, there's 10 or 20,000 things that could show up in your Facebook newsfeed. They're going to show you a dozen. Well, how do they decide? Well, it's either like the stuff that like all of your friends or your really close friends are sharing, but as far as the, you know, the people trying to make money stuff, it's going to be a few, and most of the time it's going to be somebody that paid to be there. How else, right? How else should they? I mean, it's the same thing with paid search. People used to say paid search on your Google search evil. Well, you know what? I want the person who's willing to pay the most to be on that search result to be able to be on that search result, because they're the one that, at least if, you know, capitalism works at all, they're the one that can add the most value to searchers. Right? They're the, you know, because you don't make a profit without adding value. Your profit is some share of the value that you add. And so whoever's willing to pay the most for that click probably has a good case for why they should be there. And it's the same thing with Facebook.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't want to get all, you know, crazy here, but you shouldn't spend your time tripping and worrying about whether, you know, your organic posts get enough reach. You should be trying to figure out what do people want to see, and then paying the few bucks it costs to put that in front of people, because it doesn't cost that much.
Yeah,
you can reach everybody that was really going to be interested for very little money.
Yeah, and that's why I like this conversation, because this isn't something you typically hear. I mean, I haven't taken all the training that there is available, thankfully, on Facebook marketing or anything like that. But the circles that I do run around in, I mean, you know, you just don't hear this part of it. And I really didn't want, you know, at the beginning, it's like, okay, let's lay out the problem and then get everybody really, really, really in touch with the problem here today with all of the things that you can do to get traffic. And we've been focusing on Facebook, but there's another 900 trillion other things that we can do. There's too much opportunity. And then to recap a little bit, we said, let's focus on one thing, do it well, do it all the way through before you get distracted and do anything else. See it all the way through. So for Facebook, do it simply and get it done. And
get
track.
It up and running.
You know,
and
I was thinking when you were talking about small audiences, yes, exactly. And I was thinking when you were talking about small audiences, just get a result. Just get a result. Just get somebody to come for, you know, 29 cents over to your site and buy something. Just so you can see it.
When I'm working on
one
audience
time,
targeting, if I see more than 10,000 people in the audience that one of our people has set up, I'm very suspicious that they've targeted too broadly. Especially if they're just getting crowds, like okay, so you've got 50,000 people in your most narrow lookalike audience from your customers. Great, let's add premium credit cards or online purchases or something. Like, let's increase the odds and decrease the number, and then let's make sure that all, you know, 6,000 or 7,000 people that were after get to see multiple impressions of the ad. That's the other thing, is impressions matter more than reach. Frequency is more important than reach. The more times I can show somebody an ad, the more likely they're gonna buy something from me if I'm showing it to the right people.
Yeah. Nobody has to tell Frank Kern that, right?
No, I see
his ad every single time I get on there. And some people might say, well, he's a trillionaire, so he can afford to lose money. No, people don't think that way. That's how
he doesn't
wealthy.
He doesn't make money on his campaigns. And I mean, I know maybe more than I should about his campaigns, but I mean, he makes money on the leads pay for themselves. They don't. Nobody has to buy. You know, I mean, he doesn't need anybody to buy any of the high ticket offers for him to break even on those campaigns. The first thing he figured out was how to generate, you know, this self-liquidating lead, something that you know, actually pays for itself. And so there's this constant flow of little, you know, $47 sales and $7 sales and $97 sales that feed back into the campaigns, and so he's got this engine that gets him exposure and gets him attention, and all he has to do then is try out different things to try and do the high-end monetization on the back end.
Yeah, he's tricky. People should be paying attention to that. They shouldn't be mad about those things. You know, it's just like people who are like, I use ad blocker, I can't stand it. And I'm like, you're a marketer? And you're not a marketer because you use ad blocker. You have no idea what's going on out there or how to capitalize on anything.
Marketers that hate marketing a lot, Jack, right? I mean, I remember one guy, you know, he's a good friend. I don't want to, call him out or anything, but I was giving away SEO Fast Start for free, and I had spent, hundreds of hours doing a new edition back in 2007, and when I launched it, I had it on a squeeze page. My intention wasn't to keep it on a squeeze page, but I was trying to move my list from one provider to another, and I really needed people to opt in again. He was giving me our time. I was like, if you're going to talk about the information should be free, why are you making people give you an email address? Well, I'm not making them give me a real email address, but it's just, it's weird to see marketers that hate marketing, it's a helpful instinct, though, to recognize, how could I make this, less offensive, less intrusive, and make it effective, right? Because the best persuasion, the best copy, you don't feel like you're being sold. But, I'm sure you know Colin Terrio, right? From the cold copy, right? And, that's
absolutely. We had him on not too long ago on this very show.
And, the stuff, the kind of stuff that Colin does, he's got this thing, the Viking Velociraptor formula, which is a really simple thing. Just take one thing that your target audience has observed, validate how they feel about it, and then use that as a vantage point to introduce your idea. It's really simple. You can write a five-sentence Facebook post that gets people much more motivated and interested. And you can also do things with Facebook, like you can run campaigns to change people's moods, right? Remember that Facebook experiment that everybody was all mad about last year? But we do that all the time. We'll run a campaign of four or five different news stories about people that maybe had some big success with AdWords advertising, right? Well, then we start offering training and AdWords services after that. But what we did was we warmed up the audience to the idea that AdWords might make people money. And then we came in and started trying to sell it rather than trying to come in cold and start selling it. So, just like you see with these internet marketing launches, which we're seeing less and less of kind of the four video launch, the Jeff Walker formula, which I think is good. It's, especially the big public, email promo. I just that's not in anybody's interest, I don't think. But you can do the same thing, right? You can, and you don't even have to create the content, right? You can share, this news story from that site, that story from that site, that article from that site that puts people, moves people into a particular mind frame before you start making an offer. So you can almost do a launch with other people's content. We do that stuff with YouTube videos all the time. We find something cool on YouTube. We figure how can I share this and make it bridge it over to sell one of my training parts or something like that. And I didn't have to do the original launch video.
Give an example. What's an example of that? Because I think that's actually kind of hot, and I'm not sure that many people have been aware of what's going on in a campaign like that.
So, I've been looking for YouTube videos from, kind of like authoritative people like Avinash or, Annie Cushing or people like that that are from grown-up marketing world. Where they're talking about attribution modeling. And I'm trying to find some that's simple and short. And I'd like to find several because what I'd like to do is a series of free videos from other people on attribution modeling. And then after that, take people into our thing that explains, how to solve, how much the measurement problem can hurt you, how to solve it once and for all, and then, offer, just download the instructions, or if you would like to, hire us to do it for you or with you. There's different price points for with you and for you, but we can make that offer. The thing is, we wouldn't have to then actually create, and all that extra material. We can borrow the authority of those people. In a sense, by sharing their YouTube videos. And, they put the stuff on YouTube. They want it shared. There's no problem with me putting a post on our Facebook page with that video embedded in it and paying to show it to people. So we've done that with others. We've done that with Moz, SEO Moz. Used to be SEO Moz, now they're Moz, right? They've got you know, content, mm-hmm. whiteboard, Friday, whatever. I've talked to them a million times, and I cannot talk them into they should be paying to show their content to their own fans because they're in that, you know, that, you know, whatever. I couldn't even get to the reasoning of why.
Well, they're on top of the heap.
Well, and they just, you know, nobody
I think there's something in
about it, but we've done that. We've sponsored, we've run sponsored stories that are links to their blog posts, and those things generate fans. They get lots of shares, and we get fans on our page. There are people that are very interested in the kind of marketing that we do. Well, you know, I mean, if you're not going to leverage your content, I won't.
And simply that, you're not, okay, let's put this in a package. Let's put it in a package, though. You simply do that, or is there anything else that you do in that particular kind of campaign? Like, you're literally saying you're sharing SEO Moz's awesome video or something by Matt Cutts or anything else that's targeted directly to the market. And by doing that and by paying to share that around, you're getting more fans on Facebook, and you're not making anybody do anything else, or you're not physically doing anything else in that instance.
Yeah, and there's different ways that you can kind of spin it. So let's say you've got a blog. Well, if you don't have a blog, get a blog, step one. But a YouTube video I can embed in my blog post, right? And I can have a remarketing pixel that puts them into a very specific audience. In fact, if I drove the traffic from Facebook, I can just use Facebook's pixel, and Facebook will let me build an audience of people that spent more than 30 seconds on that page. Or if I use my Wistia player, I can actually, you know, do all kinds of crazy tagging people into audiences based on how long they watched in the video. But we've got people that are doing this now with Tumblr. So they don't even do it on their own website because they don't want to expose themselves. But they want to build a targetable audience of people that are, you know, interested in this or qualified for that. So they'll put a video on a Tumblr, and they can put the remarketing pixel on a Tumblr. And so they'll drive traffic to the Tumblr. And the difference between embedding the YouTube video on Facebook and sticking it on a Tumblr and putting a link to the Tumblr, one, when you put it on the Tumblr, Tumblr's really good at maxing out their use of the open graph tags, and so you actually get a bigger preview image for the video. Second thing is when they click it, they mm-hmm. go to your Tumblr with a YouTube video, it'll play right there on Facebook, and so you can't add them to an audience based on them taking that action. But if you can get them off of Facebook onto your site, you can do more stuff. So there's reasons to do that, but you know, if you've got, you know, whether you want to think of them as a competitor or, you know, somebody that's just in the space that's related, right? So, you know, AWeber isn't really competing with Infusionsoft, but they're selling to a lot of the same people, right? You know, somebody who's doing, you know, whether it's lead pages or any of these other, you know, landing page generators, right? Well, people that need that also are probably fans of AWeber or Constant Contact or one of these other email solutions. And some of those guys are actually targetable as interests. And if they're not, you can still figure out relatively easy who their fans are by sharing their content to an audience of likely suspects, and the people that actually click through and engage with it are the ones that you want to keep talking to. So we like to do, you know, lots and lots of reach, lots and lots of frequency for the people that as they become increasingly qualified. So we want to, you know, we might show ads to a million people this month, but I'm really only after the 1,000 that are the most qualified because I want to sell every last one of them.
Right.
But it doesn't cost to reach. I mean, because, you know, you're talking about, you know, CPM values of, you know, $1.50 sometimes with Facebook, depending on the type of campaign you run, where you reach ridiculous numbers of people and you get that organic amplification. And, you know, it costs almost nothing to get in front of people. The thing is, you're not getting in front of people that are hot to buy like you were with search ads. But you don't have to keep talking to all of them. You just talk to the ones that took action on, you know. So we like to call it qualifying content. So we put up a news story that, you know, you wouldn't click a news story about, you know, how to cut your you know, IT database costs in half by moving to the cloud, right? My database came with my Rackspace account that's got unlimited domains on it. I don't worry about my cloud database costs, but if I'm trying to sell to people that do, I want to go to the people that clicked that ad, the people that didn't click that to read that story. It can be entirely editorial. It doesn't even have to be advertorial, because all you're trying to do is get the ability to target them with advertising later on. You can do the same thing with Outbrain. You know, that's a, you know, all these, you know, native advertising, they call it, which is weird and stupid, but I don't know what native means there, but like, you know, related story spam on CNN and wherever, right? The people that click through to the to good qualifying stories that are unlikely to be clicked on by somebody who's not part of your target audience. Well, you didn't sell them anything off the Outbrain click, but it didn't cost that freaking much, and now you've got them, you know, potentially remarketable on Google, on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, you know, everywhere you'd want to reach them, right? You can stalk them around the web. And the thing is, you know, you're never going to be a big brand probably unless you're a big brand already. But you can look like a big brand to a small number of people. To them, you're like the biggest company in the world. It's right, just because
right.
They see you everywhere. And again, right, you know, it's the saying is that reach tells but frequency sells. It's the frequency when you can continue to get in front of people. And again, it doesn't cost that much to do it. It's a lot like shooting fish in a barrel. You know, first you've got to build a barrel, then you've got to you know, fill it with the right kind of fish. And then, you know, your choice of firearm, obviously. You could even use a bow and arrow if you want to.
I want to underline something that you just said. That biggest brand in the world thing is really huge, because we've all been wrapped up in one of those things at least once, and most of us many, many times, where anything like Neil Patel from Quick Sprout, or, I mean, everybody has been caught in the HubSpot vortex more than once. That's impossible to avoid them. But the thing is, I think a lot of people do ascribe that to, they've got deep pockets, they've got really professional people that know how to do that stuff. There's something they're doing that I can't do. But the thing is, you can create that same feel for people, just like you said, right now. You can do it right now for the people that you can reach, for the budget that you do have. You can become the HubSpot in their eyes, where you show up everywhere with all this killer content, all this cool stuff, and you can never figure out why they're doing it sometimes. What are you doing this for? You're just sharing this stuff? Why are you doing that? You're supposed to be getting me to buy something. And you're just blissfully just caught up into their vortex of ads and pushed content and all that kind of stuff, and you're building up this little portfolio of how cool they are. It's like, God, you guys are really cool. You gave me these templates. I got to use those for infographics. I got to do this. You can tell what kind of ads I've seen in the last few days just by what I'm saying. And it's true. But you can do that for your little group starting out, right? You hyper-target and you can become the whole world that they see everywhere. They don't even have to be on Facebook. They can do the retargeting and show up every single place there's an ad spot, on every place they surf on the web.
Yeah, well, you remember when
that's a big deal.
AdSense came out, right? You were, like, you know, still, like, already deep into the marketing world by then. Well, you know, when AdSense came out, they let us put, you know, little ads all over the place. I would run ads for SEO Research Labs against the keyword Word Tracker. So anytime an article mentioned Word Tracker, I wanted my ad there, you know, for SEO Research Labs that said, you know, if keyword research is too hard, just let us do it. It's less than $100. That ad would get millions of impressions a month and like 50 clicks. But did I want clicks?
Mm-hmm.
Not really. What I wanted was them to see my name every time they were looking at something related to Word Tracker. And that you can still do with Google display advertising. It's one of the really good applications of display advertising. Is you can make
you can do it on YouTube.
Brand. The ability to remarket means that now you can be a huge brand to a small number of people, and it's the ones that were right. They came closest to buying. If you only go after the people that got to a product page, for example, you can be very conservative with it. It'll go slower, but you can be a big deal to you know, people. Like, there's not that many people in the world. When I started, you know, 2003, there were maybe a few thousand people in the world that would be able to tell you what Word Tracker was, and all of those people knew my name. That's the only people I had, because, you know, I was making a full-time living on, you know, 50 to 100 visitors a day but
yeah.
That's because it was, you know, I was
only, man, if you only had
name to the people that were in the center of the bullseye.
Right. If you only had remarketing back then, probably be too big for us to talk to on this show today.
Well, I had to get rid of that business because I didn't actually want to do the work, and so.
Then that sucks. You come up with this great idea. Why can't people just pay you for the idea and leave you alone?
Well,
you have to actually give them something too.
I got people full time, right? That were better at it than I was ever going to be because they were doing it full time, and I was never going to be able to spend 40 hours a week in WordTracker. I mean, the first person I hired was so that I wouldn't have to spend any time in WordTracker, right? I was like, okay, well, if we want to do this more and scale it up, we're going to have to, you know, like, sell it to people so that we can fill in the times when we don't have clients, you know, of our own, right? And then it just turned into, okay, well, you know, it makes more sense for this to be a standalone service. But, you know, it was kind of always the intention to spin it off to somebody. As it turned out, you know, it kind of became an unnecessary service once Google got a better version of their keyword tool. Although it's not as good now as it was then, that's for sure.
Yeah. Well, so what are you doing today? I know we pointed out marketersbraintrust.com, but is there any other place that you would like people to go to find out more about you? No, they will, and they're probably chomping at the bit. What's he got? What's his free stuff? He talked about value, so I already know if I opt in for something, it's going to be good. He understands that. So tell me where to tell people to go.
MarketersBraintrust.com. Get on the list. We do a live hangout every week. So after you listen to Jack's show, you can wait about an hour and then come to our hangout. You want to spend your entire Tuesday on marketing porn. But we also, you know, those things obviously get posted to YouTube. And we're just getting ready to start doing actually a weekly news magazine, which is, you know, kind of my idea is that there, you know, there aren't a whole lot of things that happen in marketing that you really, everybody should know about and be aware of and maybe act on out of, you know, thousands of stories. And so it's, you know, what do you call it these days, Jack? Curating. But we're actually doing a little
curating,
bit of
like, yes.
You know, just a weekly kind of, you know, PDF magazine where we'll just cover kind of the top stories and give people our interpretation on it. I don't think it's enough to tell people what's important. I think you've got to tell them why. And why, you know, who it's important for, who should ignore it, who needs to pay attention to it, who needs to do something about it right away. Oh yeah, and so we're working on doing that. So that's something we'll cover as part of that as a new summary at the start of our hangout. But then every week we'll be shipping that thing out for free. And I'm really excited about it. It's been months of, you know, getting all of the processes. We got to have somebody that does the research every week, and then an editor. And doing real company stuff is tough. It was a lot easier when it was just one
person. I know.
And ebook and a mailing list, but they made us grow up.
I get nostalgic about those days. Remember the Warrior Forum? We just come up with a little simple idea, and everybody'd go out and do it and ruin it, but we just keep coming up with little simple ideas. And now everything's, yeah, big boy businesses. But it's fun, too. It's fun. You just got to learn how to do new stuff and know what you're not good at. It's probably the best thing in the world for anybody to learn. And just don't try to do too much. So, but, I mean, you know, back in the day, if we could invent a time machine and you and me go back to Warrior Forum in 1999 or 2000 and tell them about a little bit about what the Internet's going to be like in 2015, would we not have lost our ever-loving minds with all the opportunity juxtaposed against what we were doing then? We had a forum. We had people were still taking checks because there was no way easy way to take money online. I mean, like, we would have lost our minds, and we would have thought that it was going to be this great Valhalla of marketing opportunity. And what we've actually found out is, our cautionary tale is, it's just as bad to have too much opportunity, to have too many things that you can do to bring in new business, to grow your business, as it was to not have as many things as we do now. Like, we only had one thing. What we had going for us back then is we had to focus. There was only like three things you could do to make money, right, back then, and grow your business. And here, now it's multiplied by 1,000, and people are having the same trouble. And those of us who have been through both of those eras, it's like, wow, they're having the same trouble they did back when we didn't have anything that they could really demarket. Everything was hard, and it was just go on the Warrior Forum and go out to AOL and You know, and now we're having the same kind of conversation with new clients. They're like, oh, my God, I can't anything done. I'm like, really? Because you're swimming in an ocean of opportunity. What's wrong?
Well, I can remember when the web was small enough that I actually made a good chunk of my sales from free classified ad sites. The one thing, if you do get a time machine, I don't need to go with you, but just go back and tell me to use a fake name so that nobody can, like, show up at my house with weird questions about can I help them start a business, because I don't want that to ever happen again.
I have a feeling that this has happened to you, Dan.
Yeah, I deeply regret ever using my real name. You know, I mean, I like come up with something cooler.
I'm still waiting for
David D'Angelo or Mickey Smooth.
Anything with a D apostrophe.
Well, believe it or not, guys,
really.
We are out of time today.
No, let's extend the show by 2 hours.
Awesome show, Dan.
Well, awesome. Well, thanks for having me in, guys. This was really fun.
Well, everybody, check out marketersbraintrust.com and get on Dan's list. It's very, very important that you do so. I think you've figured that out by now. So thanks, everybody, for listening. Dan, thanks so much for being here.
Thanks, Jack. We'll talk again soon.
Thanks, Dan.
Join us Tuesday at noon Eastern for the next episode of Traffic Masters, from traffic to conversion to business success.